Support for KBIA's podcast of Off the Clock comes from PS Gallery. PS Gallery features three-month exhibits of local, regional, and national artists in all media, including jewelry. PS Gallery is located at 1025 East Walnut in the North Village Arts District. More information can be found at perlostevensgallery.com or at 573-442-4831.
I'm Scarlett Robertson, and you're listening to Off the Clock, KBIA's guide to arts and culture across the state. You might not know who Greg Gillis is, but chances are you've heard of his music under the moniker Girl Talk. That's Gillis's music project, where he creates mashups that blend hip-hop and pop.
To my tape pop. It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall.
The former biomedical engineer began experimenting with musical collages over a decade ago. But it's Girl Talk shows that have become a kind of phenomenon. Infectious music is performed live, complete with props like confetti and balloons, with the end result being much like a dance party on steroids. I spoke with Gillis recently about his work. Could you explain to me how what you're doing is different than DJing?
When I started, I really kind of came out of a scene of playing with a lot of other people doing electronic music, but more just live electronic music, and also playing with bands or hip-hop groups and that sort of thing. I've always kind of came from more of a producer standpoint, and when I put out a record or when I do a show, the goal for me really isn't to like make a mix highlighting all these songs. It's really to try to create something new, even though it's entirely based around samples. It's a blurry sort of thing.
Can you explain how what you're doing is creating original music?
You know, I like walking that line where there could be debate. I think that's part of the interesting thing behind doing this for me, is pushing that envelope in terms of what's original, what's not. The goal is ultimately to make something that's transformative, to take something that previously exists and just have it become a new entity. You know, I like people to be able to recognize where it came from, but ultimately I want them to be hearing something new. You know, the goal is to make a complicated collage. And how involved can it be? But, you know, with any given album, it's not like numbers. It's like, you know, one album I could sample 300 songs, the next album it could be 600, and then it could be 3,000. And that doesn't really mean anything. So I think for me, it's a matter of kind of still having something that's enjoyable and accessible, but pushing it further and seeing, you know, how involved it can actually get. But, you know, at this point, it's wide open. Yo.
Is the process of creating a set still, what's it like?
I'm always trying to raise the bar for myself, so I feel like I've made it more and more intense, and I'm always kind of working on new little bits and pieces, and it's never like, oh, I'll just play an entirely new set, because for a live show, usually it's like maybe 300 to 500 samples that I'll trigger, and I have to memorize where they're all at and how they go together. So even when I substitute in one new part, I take something out, put in a new 2-minute segment, I have to learn how to play that and learn how to transition into it, learn how to actually execute what I want to do within it, and then learn how to transition out of it. On any given night, I never really play the set perfectly. There's always like little mistakes here or there, and sometimes that leads to a lot of the character, and sometimes that leads to a lot of stuff I like. But it's gotten a lot more intense, specifically in the last year and a half, really, since I've brought on more people.
What's your criteria for a successful mashup? You seem to have such a gift for sort of pairing these really unlikely sounds together, but it sounds so perfect. How do you know when to sort of stop tweaking?
A lot of times there are like multiple things I think work. You know, sometimes I find something, there might be 10 variables or 10 options that I think are interesting. You know, a lot of times it's kind of like where it falls into the set. You know, maybe I'm looking for a particular thing, and you know, I want it to be the sort of thing where it seems randomized, or it seems like it's unpredictable where it's going, but in reality, it's really very calculated. You know, I want it to work in such a way that it sounds even more natural than the original song, even though the entire mood or attitude or whatever has been shifted. So It's kind of like working with a bunch of puzzle pieces that don't actually fit together, and you're kind of like massaging down the edges to work them together.
You've said you're using pop as a tool for rebellion. Can you explain that?
Definitely in the early days of doing this, it was the sort of thing where I came from experimental music scene. In that context, it was kind of offensive to certain people. You know, there was many shows that where people were unplugging my equipment or people getting aggressive or, you know, there were fights. You know what I mean? There was definitely multiple shows where, you know, got physical because of the show. You know, I was really trying to make a statement. So I was trying to, you know, embrace this pop music and say, you know, it's not evil. It's okay to like these things. You don't have to like all of it, but it's, you know, you can't just box it all into one thing. And there's a lot of smart pop music and there's smart all types of music. So in that way, those early shows were pretty confrontational, to be honest, you know, that definitely like kind of, you know, rebellious and definitely trying to challenge that crowd. And I think once this project gained some momentum and people started to become fans of it, that changes that, you know, then people come out expecting to hear the pop and expecting knowing what I do. So that kind of, you know, is definitely a different thing. And at that point, I guess I kind of embraced accessibility to a certain degree and kind of kept going there. But still, to this day, you know, we play all these festivals and, you know, there still is a lot of music that's kind of frowned upon. And I definitely think there's, you know, music media still pushes things into these boxes where this is smart, this is dumb, this is highbrow, this is lowbrow. And I don't think it's always that clear cut. You know, I think just because you're trying to be smart in your music doesn't mean it's necessarily smart. And just because you're trying to come off like you're an idiot doesn't mean you're actually being an idiot. So in that way, I still feel like, you know, I'm still pushing buttons to a certain degree with certain, you know, demographics of people.
What was the first music that you ever bought for yourself?
My first cassette I got was Belle Biv DeVoe's Poison record, but I think that may have been a gift, but I definitely wanted it. So that would have been my purchase if I could have purchased it. And as far as actually making a purchase, I definitely bought Nirvana's Nevermind. That was definitely something I bought, and I think I bought it at the same time as Criss Cross, Totally Crossed Out. I think I bought both those albums simultaneously. And all three of those records, Criss Cross, Nirvana, and Belle Biv DeVoe, are classics. But that Belle Biv DeVoe tape, I think I had that for like a year before I got another music release. So I listened to it so, so much, just like wore it down and knew every word. And that cassette is very important to me.
Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, no problem at all.
That was Greg Gillis, creator of Girl Talk. He'll be performing in Columbia next Friday, June 15th at the Blue Note.